honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, trying to at least scratch the surface today on the remarkable life of Joe Peter Burrs, a fighter ace with the 20th Fighter Group's 55th Squadron in World War II, who hadn't even celebrated his 20th birthday yet when he joined that squadron. I've heard a lot of different answers to this over the years from different guys. Was piling up aerial victories something that you saw as significant or no?
Not really. I enjoyed the blowing up trains, engines, because it was sort of a game, you know. If they saw they were going to be under attack, they'd immediately blow their steam in the engines, you know, because so if you hit them with the full steam, you'd blow the thing would blow. But if you if they blew their steam, then they'd get bullets and holes around the tanks. They could repair it. And so that was sort of a cat and mouse sort of thing.
The strafing kid. Yeah.
And then I've just going along boxcars and switching towers and all this sort of stuff. Once in a while, a flak tower. So,
were there some guys that you flew with or you were familiar with that you kind of looked up to or you saw as someone to emulate?
Oh, yeah. My group commander. See, what happened, and I don't know why. Well, I was told why later on. But anyway, my first 15 or so missions, I was flying a tremendous number of wingman to the group leader. And after a while, I said, asked my flight leader, I said, hey, how come I'm, what am I doing something wrong? How come I'm always flying wing to the group? And he said, they like the way you protect his six. I said, is there a promotion in that? He said, no. I said, well, I just had liked. And so he was able to get me off of that sort of chore and made me an element leader, and I made a first lieutenant in February, 6-8 months after I was commissioned. So anyway, my group, there was Lieutenant Colonel Guskey. He had 600 and some odd combat hours through three tours, and just a tremendous guy. And of course, my hero of heroes was the group commander, Colonel Montgomery, who was 28 years old and was charged group. He was shot down and over France in the 38, when they had the P-38s, and he escaped and got with the resistance. I mean, he was with the resistance and made it out through Spain. He got the Distinguished Service Cross. I really, really looked up to him.
Sounds
and there
like
were a
it.
Couple others of the guys that had been there for a long time, you know, transitioned from the 38s, which was they had a really bad, a poor morale because they were just getting the heck shot out of them with the 38, because all their work was ground. And the kill ratio when they had the 38s was about 1 to 2 or 3. We'd lose one to every two or three that we, and then when we got the 51s, it went up to about 1 to 7.
Big difference. You mentioned earlier that after you lost your brother, you kind of insulated yourself from some of the emotions of things. Mm-hmm. But I have to imagine when you're flying all these hours, escorting bombers or strafing or mm-hmm. whatever, there had to be situations where you saw one of the guys in your squadron go down.
Oh, yeah. Lieutenant Leon, we were on a mission escorting the bombers. There were three of us, Major Goddardam, myself, and Leon. The routine was that after the bombers dropped their load and there was no indication of any enemy action, a squadron would be able to drop down and look for targets of opportunity. And that's what we were. So our flight was out wandering around looking for them. We saw a truck. We were about 10,000 feet, and we saw a truck, a military truck, go down the road. So Goddardam rolls over and starts down. And Leon, he does the same thing. He's pretty close behind him. And Goddardam goes down, fires, and barely makes it out. And Leon just went right in, and I was right behind him. And he just, crashed, and he just couldn't pull out. And I was good distance, and so I just zapped the truck and went on. So that was one where I saw, and he was a very good friend of mine. Another one, Lieutenant Pettit. It was the 26th of March, and I wasn't flying that day, and he was going to be using my aircraft. And I'd been having trouble with it, and I'd bought three missions. And I'd come back, I'd write it up, and the crew chief would start working on it. And, you know, it was something in the crews thing, and I knew I had learned how to manipulate everything so it, you know, wouldn't give me any problems. So I hear that Pettit has assigned my aircraft. I go over and talk to him. I say, hey, you know, that thing's got a lot of peculiarities. And I went over all the problems with them and stuff like that. And so he took off. And then on the way back, Pettit calls in. He's having problems, engine problems. He's crossing the channel. And anyway, he didn't make it. He went in near Ipswich and was killed flying by aircraft. And my best friend, Lieutenant Solo, he was off on a mission. He was shot up. He was hit by another aircraft, a German aircraft. He was shot down by that. And then there were one or two others that were the same thing. So there were seven of us that went over together. Of the seven, we had 100% casualty rate. We had one killed in training, three killed in action, and then three of us were POWs. So, you know, and this is near the end of the war, so-called. You know?
Yeah.
And people don't, you know, they think, oh, those guys had an easy time. Well, we were hitting a lot of... So anyway, I guess you'd like to get to my last mission.
Well, I'm up for anything you have to share because it's fascinating and there aren't too many people that can tell us these stories. But man, just when you say that, there were seven of us and it was 100% casualty rate. And you say that like that's no big deal. I mean, I'm talking to you, you're 96 years old, and people hear your voice and they think you're 50 or 60. I mean, that's remarkable enough, but the fact that you live to tell this story, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And you, I know you've shared some of this. Did you feel at the time, was there some significance from your faith or from something else that you think made you feel you were going to make it no matter what?
Yeah, I've always felt that God was with me. Not that I deserved it, but I don't know why, but I know he is looking out for me, and I just knew it. You know, if I was going to be killed, it was his will, mm-hmm. Yeah, as far as I was concerned, and that's the way it'll go.
And you had to have had some pretty close calls before your last mission.
Oh, yeah. It was. There's time when we came back with almost zero fuel. We had 15 minutes left of fuel. It was socked in. I was flying Element, and the flight leader said, we were up in the soup at 15,000 feet. He said, we'll go to 1,000 feet, and if we don't break out, pull up and bail out. And we went down, and I went down to 500 feet, and I broke out at a FITO field. You know what FITO is.
Mm-hmm.
And a big Lancaster base, and I saw that end of the runway, and I just went and rolled over and hit that runway. I was probably doing 150, doing flying speed, but it took me to the end of the runway to just be able to stop. That was, you know, and then I had to land in France one time, and I'd take it off, and I forgot to switch from my external tanks to my fuselage tank. And anyway, I was taking off, and my engine quit. I was just about, getting off the ground. My engine quit, and I got the fuel tank. I knew immediately what it was. I changed the fuel tank, and it just coughed just before I hit, you know, and I pulled up and went on my merry way. But things like that, you know, just so normal. And as far as combat is concerned, you know, there's a lot of times when the, you know, the flak was really, really, really bad. And so... You know, it's just normal things that go on.
Normal for someone like you, just not for the rest of us. Whew. Well, you mentioned your last mission, and I know there are a lot of different elements to the story of that last mission. Why don't you guide us through it as you see fit?
Oh, the 10th of April of 1945, the 8th Air Force was putting up a major force to bomb targets at Magdeburg, Berlin, Potsdam, Oranienburg, and they had about 1,500 bombers escorted by some, I think about 1,200 fighters. And so we took off that morning and got over Magdeburg, and the whole force of 1,200 or so were all together, until we hit the Magdeburg, just outside of Magdeburg, and then the force, the various divisions would split off, one to Magdeburg and one to Potsdam, one to Berlin, and our group was 490 some odd B-17s, and we had about 700-800 fighters escorting them, and headed towards Oranienburg, which is north of Berlin. And we were flying high cover. Our group was flying high cover, and up at about 30,000, and the bombers were at about 25,000. And we get to Oranienburg, everything's, you know, just milk run type of thing. A lot of flak, but nothing going on. And the bombers dropped their load, and simultaneously we were hit by a swarm of ME-262s. Well, I latched onto one of them. I saw he blew up one B-17, and I had, you know, been then rolled over to start down at him. He's down to around 25,000. So I got throttles wide open, and I'm coming in, and he's pulled into a second B-17, and just as I was pulling into a six, the second B-17 blows, and I start firing, and I get hits in his left wing and engine. I see a little smoke and fire. So he rolls over to a slow right turn and starts down to the deck, and I'm chasing him, and I'm losing my speed advantage, of course, because he's now has had balls to the wall, and I'm even, you know, but he's still got the advantage. And we get down to about 4,000 or 5,000 feet, and there's a deck of clouds, undercast, and he pulls into it, and he tells me later, after years, 60 years later, that when he went into that cloud, he turns, makes a left turn to get rid of me if I chased him into the clouds. And during that left turn, his engine disintegrated, and he started his bailout procedure. But anyway, unbeknownst to me, I see him go in. I say, I'm not going to go look for him in the clouds. So I pull off, and I look over to the left, and I see him airfield just loaded with aircraft, you know, all types, and just spread out, said, come and get me. Mm-hmm. And so I start over there. I go get down to the deck, balls to the wall, hoping to get some surprise. So I get there, start strafing. Oh, well, my flight leader was behind me during this time, and he was following me the whole way. We get down, his name was Dick Tracy, Captain Tracy. We get into the airfield, and we make a couple passes. We each got a couple on the first pass on the ground. And then on the third pass, Tracy gets hit. He's down right on the deck. He gets hit, and I see him get hit, and I see him bail out at about 300 feet, and he lands in a river right next to the airfield. So I continue around. So anyway, I made many too many passes. I made probably four or five passes, and then my last pass, and I got hit a couple times in the wing, but didn't affect the aircraft. But it's come around the last pass. I see this ME-200, FW-200, the Condor. So I'm coming in on him, and I feel a thud. And so I'm firing, and it blows up, and I'm pulling off, and I feel another thud. And I get oil over the windscreen, and so I'm pulling up. I get up to 10,000 feet and much altitude as I could. And I try to manipulate it. There was some kind of a procedure. You manipulate the throttles, mix your prop control and that sort of stuff, and you'd get better performance or some performance on the engine. So I'm deciding whether or not to go to the east or the west. The Russians were closer, and they were to the east. And we were briefed that the front lines, the Allied front lines, were in the Magdeburg area. And Magdeburg's about 80 or 90 miles from where I am. So I decided to go to Magdeburg. I'm losing altitude all along, and I'm down to about 1,000 feet. I'm over Berg, which is a suburb of Magdeburg. It's just outside of Magdeburg. Anyway, I'm down to about 1,000 feet, and so I think, hell, I'm going to have to bail out. So I unstrap everything and get ready to, and I catch out of the side, my right side. I see this FW-190 coming in at me at my 3 o'clock positions. My aircraft is burning by now. And so I pull into him. He fires his rockets. It misses. And by that time, I look, I'm down to 500 feet. I'm too low to bail out. I got to belly this thing in. So I'm looking, please, I can't believe that I've unstrapped. I'll kill myself. So, of course, this is all milliseconds, of course, going on in your head and stuff. And it's training that is, you just do this stuff automatically. You know, new circumstances, other circumstances, things are popping through your mind, and you know what to do once you learn the circumstance. So anyway, I have to go out of the left side because the right side is burning. I mean, the fire is coming out of the right side of the engine. So I get out in the wing and let myself go. And as published, I hit my knee on the horizontal stabilizer, pull the ripcord. My chute opens, and I swing once and hit the ground hard. So at that time, I think, I better find out what's going on and where I am.
Well, where we are right now is at the end of our radio time. So we're going to have to pause right there and hear the rest of the story next time with 96-year-old P-51 ace Joe Peterburs. Some of the most dangerous situations he faced in World War II were still to come. We'll find out what he experienced as a prisoner of war, how he ended up fighting with the Soviet Red Army. Yeah, it's true. And if you were listening closely, you heard him allude to a conversation decades later with the pilot of that enemy jet Joe shot down before he was shot down. You're not going to believe who that German pilot was or how they came to meet decades after World War II. So we'll explore that and more in our next episode. If you'd like to read Joe's autobiography, I have it linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com and the Hometown Heroes page on Facebook. You can also find that and other resources at joepeterburs.com. Thanks so much for listening today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.